Welcome to the Washington State Athletic Director Podcast, where we pick the brains of some of the state's and nation's best athletic administrators and discover what they do that helps their programs demonstrate excellence. My name is Cole Canyer, and I'm the athletic director at Ellensburg High School. The reason this podcast was started was because of my desire to be a daily learner and gain knowledge and best practices from as many of my colleagues in athletic administration as possible. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Let's go ahead and get started a little early just so we can allow some time for any questions that might come up. My name is Cole Canyer. I'm the athletic director at Ellensburg High School. And these are five people to whom I look up to. And about 3 years ago, it started with a conversation with Mr. Graham, Tim Graham from Tumwater High School. I was the new guy on the block at WASA, my first conference, not knowing how to ask questions to a group of people like these guys and Lacey sitting up here in the front. And ask questions about what they're doing that's making their team successful, what makes the school culture at their schools healthy. And so this is really an attempt to kind of facilitate that discussion. So if at any time throughout today's presentation you have a question for me or any one of these five, please raise your hand and ask. I'm recording this to attach to a podcast. Hopefully it'll be loud enough for everybody to be a part of. So if you're in the back and you have a question, we'd love for you to speak up or maybe come forward, so our microphone can catch your question if you do have any questions. But I've got some prompting topics, and I'm sure that we're going to have some things come about from these topics that are going to result in questions. The unique part about it is I think we got every classification represented at some point in our careers. I was one time a 2B athletic director. I'm now a 2A, and I know we've got 2A through 4A here as well. So, again, we kind of represent a wide variety of school sizes, and I think we can offer a lot to any questions that might come up. But real honestly, this session is going to be more self-serving, I think, than anything else, so I can pick these guys' brains and figure out what they're doing. So, again, I introduce myself. We have Jeff Bain from Sumner High School, Lacey London from Holy Names Academy, Mike McKee from Linden High School, Tim Graham from Tumwater High School, and Rory Oster from Camas High School. I'm going to have these guys all start out and just talk a little bit about your journey to where you started and where you are today, and want to do that real briefly and introduce yourself to the group, that'd be great.
My name's Jeff Baines at Sumner High School. My journey started as a teacher and coach, just like many of your guys's, and Tony Davis and I did our admin together, and I blame him for all of this, and just through the years, I decided to make a move down into administration and into the athletic administration piece, and it's turned out to be really rewarding, and it's something that allowed me to give back to a school and to the community and to the kids in a different way than I was used to, and that's basically where I'm at. I'm finishing up my 18th year at Sumner High School, and that's about it.
Lacey London, Holy Names Academy. I've been at Holy Names for 12 years now. AD for 8. I actually kind of stumbled into a volleyball coaching position there, and it just so happened that there were pregnancies and maternity leaves, and I had a degree in PE and health, and so I became a long-term sub, and they said, hey, do you want to be the assistant AD? I did, jumped on that, and then people decided to step down, so I was promoted up. So it's kind of a unique path. It wasn't necessarily that I went in there. I went in as a PE and health teacher, and then since then I've gotten my degree in athletic administration through Concordia, and just have learned a lot through the process. So just definitely jumping in whenever I can, taking a chance, stepping up, saying yes to opportunities has been a door opening opportunity thing for me. So it's been nice.
Mike McKee, Linden High School. I'm a graduate of Stevenson High School. I went to Sail Pacific. It's my 32nd year in education. Started as a special ed teacher at a junior high in Federal Way, Sacagawea Junior High School. Had no designs on coaching at any higher level. I mean, I love sports or being an athletic director, and the path just kind of went forward. I spent 10 years at the junior high, went to Seaholm for 3, was at Squalcom for 10, and I've been at Linden for the last 10 years, and love what I do. Feel fortunate to do it.
Tim Graham, Tumwater High School, 1981 graduate, North Kitsap High School. Moved into teaching. I've been a teacher for 30 years. I taught math. Coached assistant coach in football and wrestling, as well as a head baseball coach. When the athletic director's job came open in 1998, I thought about it, changing the philosophy, kind of influencing what I wanted to have happen. I got encouragement from Sid Ott, who was our head football coach at the time, and so we can kind of get a blessing of that nature. I felt that was a good move then, and I've been doing that for 20 years now.
My name is Rory Oster. I probably should have gone first after that that lineup of experience. I'm actually graduating from Enumclaw High School, and then after that I did my undergraduate at Gonzaga. And I'd seen all backgrounds of education. When I was at Gonzaga, I actually, for my job, to create revenue, I was a school bus driver for Medical Lake High School, and then coached when I was in college in the basketball program out there. And once that was finished, I went to Oregon. I took a job teaching and coaching basketball and teaching PE at Madras High School, which is a 4A high school. It's equivalent probably to about a 2A high school in the state of Washington. So I had a lot of background at Madras. I was a teaching coach there for 4 years, an athletic director. Well, that's how I got in that. So I was coaching and teaching. I couldn't get enough of other sports, right? So I was, while I was coaching basketball, I was announcing volleyball, and I was working football games, probably like a lot of you in here, and I was running the scoreboard of baseball games and just engulfed my life in the high school athletic culture around there, because that's what I love to do. So it seemed like knowing that was my true passion, I went and finished my master's degree in athletic administration from Ohio University during my time there, and became Madras' athletic director. 2.5 years there, and decided I wanted to go to a bigger school. So I came back home to Washington and been in Camas for 4 years as the district athletic director in Camas.
All right. So my connection to each one of these guys has kind of stemmed from relationships with people. Rory's my brother-in-law's AD. He's a baseball coach at Camas. Tim was a teacher in my wife's master's program. Mike is kind of from the Sith, the Linden Lions, who the Ellensburg Bulldogs can't quite ever get on top of when it comes to contests. So.
Been there.
Lacey, been fortunate to work with on the Wausau board just this year, and Jeff, I watched him in a breakout session 2 years ago here and realized that I'm a deficient athletic director and I don't do nearly as much as he does. So, to start things out, you guys, culture seems to be a huge theme and across schools and across athletic departments. I'd love for you guys to talk about maybe one great thing that you're doing that's really building a positive culture at your school. Don't care who starts, take it away. Jeff, why don't you start?
Okay, I guess
know
I will. So we do a lot of different things. We were fortunate to have a young man join us about 12 years ago that brought the servant leadership model to Sumner High School, and it was more so with the ASB, but because of a pretty close relationship that I have with John, we've converted it into the athletic piece. And so we really talk about the whole concept of service and serving others and putting others before yourself. I'm really fortunate that because of my time at Sumner, the amount of time, I've hired every single coach that's there right now in terms of my staff. And one of the things we look at, and this includes our teaching staff, is we don't necessarily look at the X's and O's a great deal, because most high school people are going to have your X's and O's. We really look at the kind of person they are. And one of the key things really is are they a humble person? And that's really important for me as we're looking at coaches and that. So we really focus on just building the service culture and dealing with it in that way. It's a great experience to see my more experienced coaches kind of take on, and it's evolved over the years. It wasn't an instantaneous thing. It's taken a long time to get where we're at, and the culture really now is that people want to be there. People want to come to Sumner. People want to be a part of that school and that culture, and that's kind of where our strength lies.
And if you guys aren't familiar with the program, he's talking about Character Strong. Mm-hmm. John Norland and Houston Kraft have been huge facilitators of that. Look them up. John and I know Jeff has been a part of ServiceCon.
Yeah. Yes, the Service Conference. Yeah,
statewide conference. So, anybody else want to jump in on that one?
We all do a little bit of everything that's going through there. I think one of the biggest pieces that I try to do to develop the climate and culture at Tumwater High School is with our coaches is I talk to them on a daily basis. And I know it's a difficult thing to do as you're going through there, especially if you're an AD who also coaches. But Every day I go out and talk to them, and so I make my presence with assistant coaches and head coaches, ask them how's it going, their issues or concerns. You can talk over some concerns you had with student athletes in the building, because you do have a lot of, you know, even ours in the consistent, we've had 60% of our teachers are out, or our coaches are out of building. So that's your opportunity to talk with them. So if you have that constant communication with them, I think that they feel that they're in the know, that you care about them, that they're there, that you're there for them, and you have their back, and you're backing them up on all those things. You can also talk about issues or concerns that you have that are quick and easy. Get them taken care of so they don't fester and go for even 3 to 5 days at a time. But I try to talk to them every single day if I can.
I'd echo that a little bit. I would tell you that I look at it, breaking it down a little bit differently as you're trying to build culture. I've been fortunate to, just by happenstance, to coach with some very good coaches over the years, Mac Frazier, Mount Vernon, Pat Fitter, you know, some people have been very successful. And I used to call it the it factor. I'd say, boy, they have the it factor, but I could never really figure out what the it factor was. And then I started looking for commonalities, and I find a few of them, but they were probably more different than the same. And after doing this job for a while, it finally hit me that the very best of the best build trust at a faster and deeper rate than everybody else. When you look at the best people you have on staff, they just do that. Some of it's instinctive. They just have the personality and they do it. But others have to work at it, and it's something you can work at. Just as a coach breaks down a player and tries to make them better in different facets, as an AD, I've started to look at the world differently and trying to help my coaches learn to build trust better and at a faster rate. And our kids are so diversified anymore that you know, you have to be a master of many different strategies to reach all kids, but the best of the best do that. And some kids need to be listened to. Some need to have somebody that's organized. Some need, you know, you can, the list could go on. You can think for yourself the top 3 or 4 qualities for you that cause you to buy into somebody. And I tell you that because when you get a lot of people moving down that path and becoming very good at building relationships, building trust, then pretty soon, like Tim says, when you're seeing these coaches, the culture starts to change because everybody's pulling the same direction and they all start to get it. So when you talk about culture, I kind of break it down because I think you have to have those relationships. A lot of people, in fact, everybody has a vision. Some are just far better than others. And when you get everybody collectively on board, they'll follow the vision, just like kids follow that coach. They'll run through a brick wall for them. Your coaches will too if you're building those types of relationships. And so I think the magic comes in trying to find ways to build trust with your coaches and getting better that way. And then the end product is a culture that you can be proud of.
I'll piggyback. I think this was a great question in a podcast we did. Cole asked about culture, and I think culture is like one of the most important things we really focus on at Camas. We believe we really want participation. We believe in our programs. We believe in what they offer young men and young women and what they teach them. So we try to push participation as hard as we can. Obviously, you know, schools and Title IX and all kinds of different stuff comes in with limited rosters. How else can we affect other pieces of the student body? And one thing we focus on is maybe getting them involved as part of the crowd. Right, I think that's a huge thing. I think has lost a little bit in high school athletics. But even when I was in high school, the student participation of the crowd to where it is now. And so we went back and tried, how do we build a culture to include the student body and build our community? And so we've taken some ideas, and we do some different things to build that community and involve the student body. And we make it fun for people that want to participate in our programs and then want to be there supporting the kids that are participating. We'll do stuff at our football games. You'll see just simple stuff. We just look at what are the colleges doing and what are the kids having fun doing at the colleges. You know, from inflatables to smoke machines to fireworks on homecoming, working with, you know, community members that do a local fire stand. And, you know, last year we had an awesome firework display during introductions. You know, our home wrestling meets will have music and lasers and smoke machines and stuff like that during the beginning. Same with basketball, with lasers and lights out and spotlights. Simple stuff like that to make it, you know, just the kids really want to be part of that. And even in the student, and when they're in the student sections, they get into that and they feel like they're part of the game and they have fun. I think it's a lot of thing. You know, it's always fun to compete in that game, but if you're not competing and you're sitting in the stands, what can you do to make it fun for those kids in the stands as well? And so we've spent a lot of time focusing on some of those out of the box ideas to bring them in, and then how do we get more community members to come in and see a lot of this neat stuff that we're doing in our athletic program. Basketball halftimes, we'll have our youth program, you know, third and fourth grade kids playing at halftime at basketball games. If we have a Pop Warner football team that wins the league title, we bring them out and honor them at halftime with a football game. You know, little cheerleading stuff at halftime football games that brings 80 little girl cheerleaders and all their parents to see the cool stuff we're doing in our community. So just thinking outside the box is something that we really try hard to do to build this culture that students, players, and the community members just really want to be part of.
I would say, so for those of you who don't know, Holy Names Academy is an all-girl Catholic school, so it's a little bit unique. We don't have a football program. We don't have boys. So I think that I don't have a problem getting participation in my athletic program. We have a ton of kids who want to participate from various sports across the board. We have a lot of representation there. We struggle with the fan engagement, and that's something that I'm working on and attending these conferences and trying to hear about and build about. And I'm like, that's great. Those are a lot of fun ideas. We've just invested in the Superfan app, which is an engagement app. So we're going to go down that path and see how that rolls for us. Something that I do require of my teams and my coaches and athletes have really bought into it is, you know, we are a Catholic school, so service is a huge, has a huge place for us. But we have, actually Dave Ticker, I did a session of his years ago, and he was talking about how he had all of his teams had to do a community service project. And a light bulb went off and was like, duh, like our kids have to do community service anyways. That's a great opportunity. And so I require every team to do an hour or two of community service as a group. They can use it to log towards their religion classes. And my religion teachers have told me as a school that, you know, the kids that are writing their reflections are writing about how much they enjoy doing service within their team, within their community. So that's something that's positive that we've built that kind of, you know, reflects the emotion, the mission of the school. I was thinking motion, movement. The mission of the school, and just kind of fits in there, and my coaches have bought into it, and we really have it be a student-led charge, so the captains tend to figure out what they're going to do, and it can be various things of cleaning up garbage in the neighborhood, planning a food drive, to going to Mary's Place and playing with the kids, and so they've really gotten creative with their ideas, and that's something that's really picked up for us.
Awesome. Not to take away from the Superfan app, we did a Superfan card this year, because I saw that app at the National Conference and say, is there something else I could do with you know, and obviously finances are there. So Jocelyn's made us the Superfan cards, your little punch cards. I think the biggest expense for us is the punches themselves. You don't want to get a circle punch because the kids can go downtown and get any of those. So it's got to be a special emblem. Those are around $30. We bought three of them, so administration can have those. And then as kids attended games, we would punch their cards as they're going through the. And I think it really came to reality for me in week five. We're at Stillicum, and you were separated from the teams from where the kids are. So I walked over to the kids, and that's the first thing it is. Graham, did you bring your punch? We should all be getting punches right now. And I, you bet. So I went and punched them, and then we do for other things like tennis, you know, things that you don't normally get the participation for fans, and say, hey, you know, tennis is a double punch day today. Anybody that's out there going to get a double punch, and we're doing it for the plays. We're doing it for other things, and then they get a T-shirt after they hit a plateau, you know, that says T-Bird Superfan in our school colors going through there. And a lot of times they match up with, you know, your whiteouts, your greenouts, your blackouts, if they want to have it there at their events with the basketball games especially. So that did increase attendance for us. We're going to push it a little bit harder again this year, and hopefully that works out for us.
If you're not taking notes, you should be. Ask any questions again. Any questions that come up, please ask. Moving on, it's very, very similar with culture, tied in closely, I think, but what do you guys define as education-based athletics? NFHS has really been pushing that term and that kind of approach, education-based athletics. What does that mean, and how does it show up at your school?
I think you can learn a lot of life lessons through sport. I mean, you know, it's we've learned about, Aaron talked about, you know, needing to fail this morning, and there's a lot of safe opportunities for kids to fail in high school sports and education-based sports that, not that they can't do it in their club programs as well, but I think that we offer them the opportunity to try it, fail, get back up, figure out what to do. You've got your team behind you, you've got your coach to educate you, and our coaches are really focused on educating the whole athlete and not just the sport-specific piece of the athlete, so they understand that they're student-athletes. You know, I tell my kids and my families at the beginning of the year, they're a daughter first, so they have to be right at home. They are a student second, so they have to be right in the classroom, and then they're an athlete third. So that's the priority of which they need to perform. And so I think that we're just able to educate the whole thing, and that's our focus compared to the clubs that we're kind of battling in Seattle, at least.
Yeah, I think Lacey, you know, really hit it on the head. Education-based athletics, in my mind, is what separates us from club sports and makes us better. Right? Puts the focus on not specifically skill, you know, doesn't solely tunnel vision skill development and winning. It's really focusing on building young men and young women to be successful later in life. And that's what we put the emphasis on, and that's what we really focus on. And I think one of my favorite sayings, what you brought up, is it provides them a field to fail. Because, you know, I think you learn most through failure. And what a perfect place to fail. You know, with these students, we don't want them failing with drugs and alcohol. We don't want them failing with unprotected sex. We don't want them failing with grades in the classroom. And we're creating a perfect place for them to fail. You lose a game, so what, right? You wake up the next morning and you move on. You know, but the lessons you get to learn from that are going to make them so much more successful later in life. And so just really driving home that just this is the perfect opportunity to fail and face adversity and overcome it.
I think one of the things that I try to really focus on as well is it starts with me. When I meet with my coaches and I, you know, I meet different times and in different ways, but at least once or twice a year I'll get bagels and breakfast, and I just have them all come in early, and I think it starts with me in terms of the emphasis of, I'm never going to judge you on your win-loss record. That will never happen from me. I mean, that may come from the parents or the community, whatever, but that's never going to come from me, and I try to instill that in them. But I think they know, and I think if you polled all of the coaches that I have, if it's a character issue, then we'll have that crucial conversation. If it's something that has to do with, you know, the character or not building the character or displaying that negative character, then there's the issue. And I think my coaches know that, so there's that sense of relief, so to speak. The toughest conversation I had was about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when one of my coaches came in and his first words out of his mouth was, "Are you going to fire me today?" I'm like, "No, why would I fire you?" He was coming off a, you know, like 1-8 season, and he was worried about that. And I think at that point, our relationship was able to go to that next level. He kind of put that beside him and move forward. And I think it starts with you, and I think that's really important for you to find your purpose, your why, and I talk about that in my breakout, that you have that solid within you, and then you convey that to your coaches.
Jeff did a nice job. I listened to his talk this morning, and you're never done learning and getting better at what we're doing and where we're going, so that's a continual thing is happening. A couple years ago, I listened to a speaker at a national conference about branding your school, and that's about what your culture's at. What does your school mean? What's that about? For the majority of our sport programs, they have, you know, themes. You know, T-Bird creeds, as we're going through, and that's the T-Bird creed in most of our sports. They're not all exactly the same, and as Aaron Jones said, she learned most of what she did in athletics. Everything was through athletics, and I think that's what our kids are learning too. So if you can come up with, and I'm trying to streamline that and trying to find different words, and listening to Jeff this morning, I jotted down some notes and came up with a couple others so that it works well in each of your sports, so that, you know, if your girls are doing girls soccer and they transition to the basketball team and then they're out on the tennis courts, that there's a prevailing theme that goes through there, and they understand what they're about and where they're going. And then, you know, we do our leadership training classes two times a month so that we can try to get those words to them. And then it's done program-wide, and everybody is hearing the same message. But branding that and coming up with that cultural norm is important.
I would say that ADs are more important now than ever have ever been from a standpoint of being able to protect your coaches to do the work. If you ask me in 32 years what's changed the most, I would say that athletics is maybe one of the last places that kids have a chance to learn some of the lessons where it used to be a little more pervasive. But because parents have become so overprotected and monitoring every single thing that's going on and kind of micromanaging, and that's my own assessment from doing this for 32 years, that has changed a lot in my span. And so now we live in a society where everybody wants things right away and their kid needs to be affirmed. I mean, they think the coach should have every skill set in the world to handle everything perfectly. And if not, after a couple of years, they're going after them. And we're the last line of defense to be there to protect them, to make sure that we're keeping good coaches around and not losing them because they're getting harder and harder to find. I would tell you that even though I know it's not a perfect world, Lyndon is fortunate to have still a lot of our coaches, probably over 80% of our coaches in the building, which makes an enormous difference. Obviously, if you're there every day and you have a chance to have contact with kids, that's going to be better than not being there every day. And so you need an administration that buys into that conceptually and is going to work hard to make that happen, or else the job continues to get harder and harder. But I do think that it's the last place where you can teach concepts and still push kids, teach them a work ethic and to battle through things around. And when I started, there were probably more venues for that to happen, but now that's changed, and so sports are more important than ever as far as I'm concerned.
We are all humans. We all go through times of struggle and go through some really difficult situations. I'd like you guys to talk to the group about one difficult situation you've had to work through, how you worked through it, and what made it difficult.
I'll tell you one of the most difficult situations all of us in this room face is removing coaches from their line of duty, right? Whether they're good, whether they're not very good at what they do, or you may not necessarily like them very much, it's still never easy to take a job away from somebody. I think that's very difficult. But it's so important to have your people and that people that you trust that are there for the right reasons. And when I came to campus and through the first year removed two coaches that have been there a while out of the first year just because they didn't fit the vision and philosophy I had for the athletic program and where we wanted to go. And it's difficult. And how do you get through it is what I've found in asking people have done it a lot more than me and just asking questions. And the advice I got was just keep it professional, keep it short, and understand that they're not going to be happy, but don't take it personal. All business. Don't try to, beat around the bush and just tell them what you're thinking, what's happening from there, and then end the conversation. And then when it's over, I know you just look for support from your fellow administrators. I had to, and my wife at home, and just understand, because I know for me, and I think most of us, that's not an easy situation to be put in, but you do what's right based on what's right for kids, and just take the advice you get from, people that have been doing it a lot longer than I have or you have, and you just seek out their professional opinion, and keep it short, keep it professional, and move on.
Mike and I actually had that conversation on his podcast episode. That was one of the questions I asked. What's the most difficult thing you had to deal with? And being a relationships guy that he is, that was the first thing that came out of his mouth, was having to fire coaches for whatever reason. So at some point, you're going to have to go through it if you haven't gone through it already, and you bet it's not an easy thing at all. So.
And I don't think that should be our first line, is to make sure that we're trying to fire coaches as we're going through there. And so it's just like anything that you're doing, you'd want to be treated in a fair way. So as I come through, I try to think of it as a three-year line of work. So, your first year you get hired and we're watching what you're doing. And it's, as Mike said, it's our job to defend those coaches. It's our job to work for those coaches. And that's what I do. I'm there for the coaches so that they can work and coach our kids. And if they're not doing something that's right or where they're going through, my job is to educate them. And if they're getting better and doing what they're doing, then I can certainly support them and continue to go through that. But they have to be able to take the education that I'm trying to give them, just like you would anybody else, and go through that process. I saw one concept at one point, and I had never seen it again, and it hasn't been refined. A Danielson model for coaches as it comes back out, and what are the four domains, and how can you look at that? I mean, it'd be a great way for us to work through that evaluation piece. You know, our evaluations are so, they're just not a lot of meat to them, and it's hard for us to figure out what that it factor is that coaches have and go through it. But I would always give them a 3-year reign to say, hey, we're going to work through this and we're going to make sure you get it. At the end of 3 years, they don't get it. It is a difficult thing to let them go, but it's much easier because you've gone through your steps and they've understood and heard you too.
Yeah, I think in 17 years, that's only happened to me twice. I have to laugh when Cole asked that question because when he says one thing, I'm thinking within the last month or, everybody has, when you're a struggling program, your problems are different. When you're in the middle and you're still building, it's different. And when you're having a great deal of success, it's different. I mean, most people say, yeah, we'd love to have Linda's success. Along with that success, though, comes a lot of people who invest a lot of time and money and think that they know as much or more than coaches. And I'll give you a prime example. I'm sitting at the state tournament and there's 20 seconds to go in the state tournament, and we're going to win the basketball state championship. We're playing a very good WF West team. And a guy, an old codger from Linden, who's out of the stands, he's about 75, and he walks up to me, and he looks at me, and he goes, we should have won by 30. And he storms off. And I'm thinking, I don't want to hear that. I mean, we're winning the state championship, and you're still not happy. But I do agree with, I think you treat people respectfully. You try to show grace when you can. You don't say too much, you just do what you need to do, and at the end of the day, hopefully if you treat people good and you're taking care of people, the vast majority of people get the big picture. I remember Pat Fitter did tell me once, though, he says about every year, as good a job as you do, you probably tick off about 5 people. After about 10 years, you're up to 50 and everybody they know. He goes, then it starts to get a little bit tougher, and I thought, yeah, that's probably some truth to that.
I guess I would say, yes, letting go of coaches is difficult. Any kind of personnel like that issue is difficult, but parent issues are tough. I mean, I'm sure we've all had a parent phone call or email in the last week, couple days, hours. One coach that I worked with, I had the benefit of kind of finding out before and after, like, what this conversation with his parent was. And I had parents, I forget what the conversation was, the problem was, I sat with them, I listened. And that's the biggest thing is, ideally I'm going to try to have a conversation ahead of time so I know why they want to meet with me. I never like to go into a meeting blind, if at all possible. But this, if I know, then I can sit and listen and hopefully diffuse it so I don't have to have a face-to-face meeting necessarily because time is valuable. But did meet with this one particular parent, it was a playing time issue. It wasn't a playing time issue, but it was a playing time issue. It's what it always is. And I sat and listened and I heard them and, I told them what I was going to tell them and circled back with the coach, and the parent had found the coach again after the fact and said, I sat with Miss London for, 35 minutes, and she just listened, and she wasn't going to budge. She wasn't going to move on whatever I wanted. And he was like, well, no, I told you she wouldn't. And they were like, well, So I think just being firm, knowing what your standards are, having integrity, dealing with it, understanding that you have people that back you and that you're backing your coaches, it's not always easy. Sometimes you do have to make the call of, hey, coach wasn't necessarily right here, and now we need to figure out how to make it right and make that change too. Like, we need to acknowledge that things don't always go right. We're not always right. We do make mistakes. But if it's a playing time issue, I'm not going to sit here and tell you my coach. I'm going to fire my coach because she's not playing your daughter. So definitely battling those issues is tough. But having support system of my community, and my husband is amazing. He hears a lot about it after the fact.
And I would agree with what everybody's saying there in terms of the personnel part of it. I'm going to take a little bit different approach just because they did a nice job of covering it, is disciplining of athletes. When I have that young man or young woman sitting across from me, my office is purposely structured, so there's nothing between me and whoever I'm talking to. It's just one-on-one. We're sitting in 2 chairs talking to each other. And my heart is telling me, just give them a break. they're a kid, just give them a break. But you know, as soon as you give them that break, it's going to come back and bite you somehow. So, you know, that's really important for me to hold true to our code of conduct that's within our district, hold true to our coaches. I involve the coaches when I can. Prime example this year, we had a starting safety that missed two games because he decided to punch a kid because he stole his vape. I said, son, I have two issues with you right now. One, that you punched a kid, and two, you hit him because of a vape. So, you know, it was a tough go, and it was a tough conversation to have with the kid and the parents and their appeal to the principal. But I think you just got to be true to where you're at, true to your beliefs, true to what your code is, and just have really good communication. I think that's the most important part.
Kind of to back up that a little bit, I had a difficult situation a couple months ago. I had a parent just call and chew me out, like one of the worst ones I've ever gotten. And it was because of a mistake I made. We rescheduled an event, didn't get to this parent and a couple other parents, and they were hot about it. Anyway, this guy came, he lived out of town, but he was coming for his son. And nonetheless, my answer to him was, you are 100% right, I screwed it up. And all of a sudden, all of his anger went away, and he was understanding. Like, that's the one piece of advice I give a lot of different people, especially people who are young in their careers. Admit when you're wrong, because you will be wrong at some point. And if you're wrong, and you admit it, there's nothing anybody else can challenge you for, can be angry with you with, because you're going to improve on that just the same way that we want our kids to do that as a life lesson.
And so, Cole, can I piggyback on that? I think another huge piece that I found helps immensely in my career and really as a line of defense for my coaches is listening, right? Just sit down. Listening can diffuse so many hostile situations. It's incredible. I think any parent, yes, parents are a pain in the butt, but any parent, they're talking and they're saying something because they believe they have something worthwhile of saying. And so to give them, I almost act like a line of defense for my coaches. If I can hear it and they don't have to hear it, for me that's a win. Like, okay, tell me why you're so mad. Okay? And I just sit here and listen. I don't have to engage in a conversation, but I listen. Let them get it all out. Tell them, thanks for letting me know. See what I can do. I'll look into it. And that's it. And everything kind of, more times than not, it diffuses from there because they had an opportunity, someone heard them out. And so I just piggyback because I totally agree. I admit when I'm wrong, tell them I messed up, and I'll listen. If they want to talk, I'm here to listen. I won't engage in the conversation, but I'll listen to them.
For those of you who were able to come to the last breakout session about stress management that I was a part of, Dr. Ken Briggs did an outstanding job of talking about stress management techniques and some ways that you can deal with a lot of the stressors that come with the job of being an athletic director. I'd like you guys to touch on your favorite, most effective way to manage the stress that comes along with the job. Kind of detail for the group what it is that you do.
I'll start. I'm kind of a unique bird, but I get up pretty early in the morning because that's my time. And it, to be honest with you, it started when my daughter was born and I was coaching two sports, and I promised that I would never grade a paper or do anything with school when I was home, because I wasn't home a lot as a two-sport coach, and we were a young family. So I get up early and I take care of what I need to take care of, and so my routine is I'll go in and I'll do my whatever the exercise is, but I give myself 15 to 25 minutes, and I shared this morning and I'll share it again tomorrow, my breakout is of listening to YouTube. I'm a big YouTube junkie in terms of the motivational speakers. I read one article a day on education because of my dual role as AP and AD, and then I'll look at something that has to do with athletics. And that's my morning routine, and I find that just kind of helps me with all the stress, and I gives me that, whatever, that hour and a half just to forget about it. But I think almost everybody has said it here today. My savior is my wife at home. She hears a lot, and I have to have her sign a confidentiality form, so you have to sign this, hon. But she truly is a savior in terms of me being able to bounce things off of her. Just she knows me. We've been married almost 28 years, and she knows when it's time to talk and that. So those two things are my saviors, really.
I finally, last summer, I've always been an active person in life, but I found a little fitness studio that I've really bought into and became a member of, and it's Pilates, strength training, all that good stuff, and really have enjoyed making that a priority in my life again and putting myself first for the first time in a while. I also have two Labradoodles that I love and adore, and I'm like, I took a while to, before I said yes to getting a dog in my life, and these two are corny and they mean the world to me, but truly it's like they kind of take the stress away. You know, it's like I come home, I've had a crappy day, and like they're at my window like losing their minds, can't wait to see me, can't wait to do that. It's like I'll just sit with them for a few minutes, hang out with them, and then it's like, okay, cool, we can go on. And that sometimes that's necessary for me to have that even before I see my kids and my husband, so that I can have that like let go of whatever is happening. And I guess the fact that I have a 35-minute at least commute home is nice to be able to digest, to take some time to process. But it's nice to have that before I step into family role, and so we have not taking it all out, because sometimes you have a really crappy day and it's hard not to bring it home. So I do try to leave it there or in the car or at least with my dogs, and I can't not be happy when Annie and Lulu come running. So
I tell my wife very little. Plausible deniability is a really good thing in the town of Linden. Our coaches and AD's spouses at the grocery store, there's not a safe place many times, and so the less she knows, the absolute better. You know, my body's broken down. I can play a bad round of golf, but I play ping pong. And me and my head boys basketball coach, we've played about 2,500 games of ping pong over the last 3 years, and I've got this old retro scoreboard in my office, and every time I beat him, I'll put the score up so the kids can come in and kind of see what the score is. But unfortunately, I live kitty corner to my pastor, and so sometimes those games get a little bit intense, and I have to yell out the window, "I'm sorry, pastor," on occasion, just because of the competitiveness of us playing. But that's about my last athletic outlet I have left. And when I get hurt and can't play ping pong, it's going to be a very, very sad day. So.
Yeah, your family has to come number one, and that's so important as they're going through there. And my kids, when they were growing back up, were always with me. And you know, my son had the keys around his neck. He was the AD. He could run, go get stuff if he needed to. Somebody, a coach, would ask for something, and he goes, "I know where it is, Dad," and he would go do it. So a lot of times, your family being there is great. I'll tell you one real quick with my daughter. When she was about 8 years old, I was after a game. I was talking to a parent, and we were going through, and I think it took a little longer than she wanted it to, because she just came over and said, "Dad, why don't you just invite him home for a beer? I'm ready to go." I said, "Okay, sweet, just a sec, we'll get this going." It kind of calmed things down. The parent got back to me and said, "Oh, you know, okay, we're averages are going through there." But I think one of the things, I don't get stressed about a lot of things and as I go through, but I think one of the things I talked to at the beginning about communication, and I think if you are in good communication with everything's going on, I think that relieves a lot of your stress. I'll get phone calls at events I'm not at, and the coach will say, "Hey, Tim, just let you know that this happened. I don't know if there's going to be any pushback from it, but just so that you're aware of it." So I get those all the time. They know they can call me and they can get that going. So when I get that phone call at 7:45 in the morning, I'm not surprised by it. I know exactly what's going on. "Yeah, hey, I heard about that. Let me hear what your side was. Let's see what we can get going." And as Roy says, listen, diffuse it. But it doesn't come as a surprise to you. You know, you're in the know, and I think that's important. So I encourage that communication.
Yeah, like Tim said, if you haven't told your coaches yet to make sure you're aware when something happens that you might get a phone call, make sure they are aware, because you want to know ahead of time. My advice would be, if you don't have it yet, figure out how to grow thick skin. I think that helps immensely with stress. You can't and you will not make everybody happy. Okay, people are going to say mean things about you. People are going to tweet mean things about you. Radio stations are going to say awful things about you. And you're going to go through this process. But at the end of the day, if you're making decisions and you're acting based on the student's best interest in mind and what you believe is best for your kids, what's best for your community, and that's why you're doing what you're doing, you're able to, with the Briggs, like Dr. Briggs said, leave it at the door. You check it on the way home. And you don't have to take it personal, because you're at peace with yourself, right? Like, it's okay what other people think. When at the core, you know that you're making decisions based on what's best for kids and the community, and the people that are in that process are all on board and know what's going on. So figure out how to have that thick skin. Don't let it take personal. And then my other thing that what I took me about 4 years to learn was turn it off. Sometimes you got to turn it off. You know, you got to let I like to communicate with my coaches. They know I'm out of the office from now until through Wednesday. They know when I'm going on vacation with my family. They know where I'm going to be, when I'm going to be. And, you know, the message to them is, hey, I'm on vacation with my family for 5 days. We're in Arizona. You know, unless it's an emergency, shoot me an email. Don't try to call because my cell phone's going to be out. Turn it off. When you're with your family, you got to give them time, and you can't let it engulf you. And the best way I found is to turn the cell phone off and put it away and don't even worry about it. And that's, man, as far as family, home, separated professional, personal life, that's been a huge addition to my life.
One piece of advice I've definitely taken from Tim is exactly what he said. My 5-year-old daughter runs around with my keys. She's lost them once, but she is loved at the school more than I am, so it's fun to have her around. One piece of advice I give all you guys is if you have a core group of people to whom you can go and vent, who know what you're going through, that is, to me, the biggest thing that I have is our admin team is athletic-minded people who've all been coaches. One's a former AD. They get it. And so I can go in and shut the door, vent, be done, move on, and they know exactly how I'm feeling and what I'm going through. So you guys can find that or have that.
You can't get hurt that way, though. My son, when he was about 4 years old, we're on the field. We're throwing rocks off of the baseball field as you're going through there, showing him the game and how it goes. And I tell you what, he's probably about 3.5. He turns around and hucks this one, and it clocked me right in the forehead, and it ballooned up a little bit, and I said, yeah, I know we weren't cleaning off the field, but calm it down.
All right, I'm going to ask one more question as we go through this, and then at the end I want you guys to ask any question that's burning, because, you know, the first meeting that was the WASA conference was first year or second year AD panel, or I guess orientation, and it was, hey, ask questions, you know, network and do this and do that. And that's not an easy thing to do. And now is your opportunity to say, hey, Mike, how did you do this? Hey, Lacey, what do you think about this? And so come up with something that you can ask this group after this question. Okay, guys, million-dollar question. What do you know now that you wish you knew as a first or second year AD?
That's a good question.
I will piggyback on some of the things that Rory was saying in terms of they're not attacking you. More so maybe the parents or the unhappy person, it's not an attack on you or your beliefs. They're emotional. And we, you know, being a parent of athletes, I've been in that situation and I've been, you know, upset and that. And so, you know, it's really important to remember that. And because their passion is about their son or their daughter. And you want to see that passion. And I really, as Roy did a nice job of talking about, just kind of absorbing it. And one of the first things that I talk to the parents about, if it's an upset parent, is I get why you're upset, because you care about your son or your daughter, and I totally respect that. But then we kind of move forward from there. So that was probably that one thing. It was hard. For me, it was hard because I'm a really competitive person, and I'm like, oh my gosh, if Mrs. Smith doesn't like me anymore, oh no, I'm in trouble now, because it's going to be all through Sumner, and Sumner's such a small, tight-knit community. But that wasn't the case at all. So just know it's not a personal attack, and they're just passionate about their kid.
I would say you can't do it all. I can't do it all. There's a lot that, when I first came on, it's like, I'm going to do all of this stuff. And then you have to get realistic about it, and especially attending conferences. You know, just when I went to the national conference this last winter, you know, I went through every session. I'm like, let me just take one little thing. What's my one idea here that I can take and implement? What's my one piece? Because if I try to do A to Z, it's not going to happen. If I try to do A to D, it's probably not going to happen. But A might happen, and I might actually be able to take that and implement it and then keep rolling from there. So the more I've been doing this, the longer I've been doing it, it's like I know I say yes to a lot of things, but I do try to just take the one little piece and let's be realistic about what I can actually get done and do it. And I do have a list of other things that I want to get done, and at some point I hopefully will, but don't try to take it all on at once. Just pace yourself. It's a lot of time.
I got to tell you, that's my biggest thing when I leave conferences. I always leave a little bit depressed because I see a guy like Jeff Baines who gets up at 3:03 in the morning and does his deal, and I go, how can I ever be like that guy? He's Superman. You know, how does he do that? Or, you know, Mike's doing this at his school. How can I do that? I always feel kind of depressed when I leave here. But if you take one thing and try to implement it that works for your school, that's the best way to go right there.
Boy, there's a lot of things. If I knew then what I know now, I'm wondering what my path would have been. But I would say, I've always thought that you're never as good a coach or AD as you can be until your kids have gone through the system, because you look at the world differently once your kids have gone through. And I guess if I was to pick one thing, I'd say it's the concept of grace. I think when you're younger, you're towards the law, and when you get older, you start moving down the continuum to loving the law is kind of the balance. And we're trying to find a spot in the middle, but I think grace is something that comes upon you after you've been through the battles. And when you have those kind of conversations with parents and stuff, you look at them differently too. You're almost, instead of being fired up and mad at them or whatever, you're feeling a little more kind of sad and disappointed you weren't able to better serve them. And you still do what you think is right. It just changes your mindset a little bit. So.
I would say one most important thing, especially for maybe like new athletic directors, and which took me a year or two to figure out, you find a mentor, you find someone who's great at this job who you really respect, and you have them on speed dial, and you hammer them daily. And like you, question after question after question after question after question, and let them help you and let them guide you. I know that was a huge turning point in my career of figuring out how to be more effective and what this job's supposed to be, and why I really got into it was finding that mentor and just always just bouncing things off him and talking to him, and just let him help with my growth. And so that's probably my biggest advice, to do something, you know, like that early.
I think it changes constantly. I think I'm much better at handling parent problems now because I've dealt with 1,005 of them and understand how to talk to them and go through there. But then it's now on this end of it, it's more difficult. You've built so many things in your program, it's hard to maintain everything. You know, it's almost that you can't cut it out. That traditional things are going through there, and the kids are going, well, we're used to that. We want to do that. And so it's a tough deal. But I do believe it gets easier for the most part. You just get better at dealing with the issues and concerns and, you know, going to those things. Not that this is an easy job, I'm not saying that. It's probably one of the toughest jobs, I believe, in the schools.
Awesome. What questions do you guys have for anybody on the panel?
I have one. What are you, any suggestions on how you can communicate better with your out-of-building coaches? Does anybody have any things they're doing in their school with that? Trying to get that communication piece.
I send out to my coaches, like every Friday afternoon, I'll send out eligibility reports, the next week's schedule, bus transportation schedules, just in that effort to communicate with all of them, but especially the out-of-building coaches. We meet every season I'll meet with the coaches, but then, like I said earlier, I'll try to meet at least two or three times a year with the entire coaching staff. Again, I think the more we can communicate, the less we're going to have some of those issues. And then I also think that it invites them into the building. We try to get them in as much as we can. For instance, I got real creative. We contract out for our athletic trainer, and she's amazing. But I just wanted a way to get her in the building. So she's our paraeducator now. So she's actually there all day. She doesn't do athletic training all day, but she now is in our building, and she does the athletic training after school. So just ways of ingraining them into the culture.
I create a calendar for them, when we hire new out-of-building coaches, we're up front and say, here's the expectation, here's the calendar. We need to schedule these meetings. Can you do that? And it's in season, it's a minimum three times a week where they visit with myself and secretary one-on-one, whether it's 10 minutes before practice, if before school, early in the morning, works better in their schedule, whatever that is. you know, we actually set that on the calendar. You're going to come in Tuesday, Thursday, Friday this week at this time, and we have it on the calendar, so we know what's going on. And that's usually an easier one. The portion I've found over time that's difficult is for out of building coaches out of season. You know, because the worst thing you want is not see a coach for 5 months, and that's tough. And so we've been intentional about building that in the calendar. At least once a month, I have 30 minutes carved out for out of building coaches. We're not in season. They have to come in one-on-one. And, you know, we talk a little bit about the program. And honestly, more times it's just more about how's the family doing, you know, how's the job going, will it take any cool trips, and just open that line of communication. So my advice would be intentional. Put it on the calendar. Give it to them ahead of time, schedule for the year, and keep close to it so you maintain that relationship and move on from there.
Can I ask, do you do that with assistant coaches as well?
I do not.
Head coaches?
It's a lot of meetings.
That is a lot of meetings.
We do gatherings every couple months, whether it's cards, barbecue, or something. And we invite all of our coaches. We'll get somewhere between 20 and 35 coaches, and we just hang out for a couple hours. Just try to do the fun stuff. Where it's not the work stuff, where we're trying to build relationships.
Any other questions?
How many of you are also assistant principals or student students, stuff like that?
My activity is athletics, so I do student government, clubs, all that stuff.
So how do you find yourself balancing, you know, the discipline issue comes down, or, you know, your other job other than the AD, and how that, I mean, is that just to add on the hours, or how do you?
One of the things that I try to do is I try to structure my time, and there's times during the day that I'm working on straight athletic stuff, but I try to, school is school and athletics is afterwards. I'm there quite a bit. I'm at Sumner a lot, and I'm not going to lie to you guys and say that I'm not, so. I get there early, I leave there late usually, and so it's just, I put school is school and athletics are athletics, and just try to build the supports.
I try to map my day out, so 8 o'clock to 3 o'clock while school is in session, you know, this is my time for this. If there's gaps, it's kind of, I've heard it coined as OPS, other people's stuff.
I should have it on my calendar now.
VPAD is, in my estimation, I mean, there's a few that break the mold, but it'd be the least desirable job out there, right? Because of the amount of time. The ones that want to put in the time, I mean, I think it's great. The bottom line is you can either survive as an AD and put in the time you need to get events done, but if you truly want to build a program, you have to have the time to build the relationships and to put the work in. And when you split it, you can still do it, but that means he's in putting in his 14 hours a day to make it all happen. And some are able to do it, they've got the skill set, but for the most part, a lot of the buildings that do that, after about 3 or 4 years and they turn over VPs, they get the message, and then they'll create the AD spot, and in about 6 years, a new soup will come in, think they need to save money, and they'll go back to the other one, and they kind of cycle through the same pattern. But it is, in my estimation, the toughest job just because of the requirements to be an administrator have changed so much over the last 5 to 7 years.
I would venture to say it's much harder at a school like St. George's than it is at a school like Ellensburg High School, where you have three other assistant principals and you might be doing.
Well, there's backup based on things like that where, you know, there's times, I mean, you know, if there's a home game going on, I'm supposed to be there, I'm there, and that means, you know, either the head of school or somebody else going to have to take a discipline issue or whatever that is, but yeah, The major discipline issues that are the 2-day investigations are killers for ADs, and that's part where
2 days if you're lucky, right?
Yeah. If things really move well, right. And everybody tells the truth. Right?
Starts with one kid, and then, yeah.
And I think that's the other administrative support that you have to work with them and say, you know, when I'm here doing this, I can't. You guys got to take care of that for me, and that's what I try to do.
And build that relationship. I'm fortunate because all of our administrators at Sumner High School are all former coaches. So they get it, and they understand it. So.
That's us too. And it makes a big difference when your soup walks down the hall and pops in a couple times a week to sit down and talk to you and knows what's going on. That's a little different than some places where the job gets a lot harder because they don't have that time.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Washington State Athletic Director Podcast. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email me, cole.canyer@esd401.org, or call my office, which is 509-925-8315. Thanks a lot. Go Bulldogs.